From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on September 12th, primary day. 12 candidates for Rochester City Council's 5 at-large seats, and we've been taking our time over the last several weeks, bringing you conversations with 3 at a time. And this is another chance for you to hear 3 candidates for Rochester City Council explaining their backgrounds, why they're running. You know, it's interesting. It is such a cross-section of our community running for these seats, and there was a lot of talk after November, especially after Election Day, that more citizens would want to get involved, would say, regardless of your political background, this is something I want to do. This is a moment for me to do that. I think we're seeing that with the city council race. And so this is our ongoing series to bring you the candidates for city council. And let's go ahead and introduce the candidates now. One of them has been in city council for most of the last 8 years. Jackie Ortiz is running again. And thank you very much for taking the time, Jackie.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mitch Gruber is here. He's the chief programs officer at FoodLink. And this is your first run for office, Mitch, is that right?
That's right. I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Evan.
Well, thanks for taking the time. And Tom Hesman is, among many things, a member of the 23rd Legislative Committee. He's an information security risk manager for a firm based out of Falls Church, Virginia. Is that right?
That is correct.
And you were the 2008 Democratic candidate for county clerk.
That is correct.
I was going to say sacrificial lamb. That was not true.
Well, I end up getting over 40% of the vote.
I know.
So
see,
I think I did fairly well for my first time
out. It's totally disrespectful to say that. No, I joke, Tom, but I think this party does certain things to elevate certain people and then position them because they see a future. And here you are now running for city council. Why this position? Why right now?
So I've been kind of a political junkie, you know, since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Growing up, I always followed politics. I'd watch the news with my dad. And then in college, I became a political science major. And I wanted to be an intern in the White House. So in college, I applied for a White House internship. They only accept 200 people. And I was told that there was very low odds I'd get in. And sure enough, I got in. So I went down to D.C., became a White House intern. And then after that, I ended up getting a job and staying in D.C. So my wife and I were down in D.C. for 10 years, and then we moved back to Rochester. And so, you know, community service, I joined my neighborhood association, and before I knew it, I became president of the neighborhood association. So for 4 years, I led a lot of neighborhood activities, community activities. We brought PACTAC, which is a group working with the police, volunteer, back to our neighborhood. So I did a lot of development in the neighborhood, worked a lot with city officials, city hall. So, you know, I thought that the time is right to try to run for city council, take all my experience policy with the White House and working in my neighborhood and take the next step.
And so from your perspective, having worked in Washington, having seen politics at that level, moving back to Rochester, seeing politics running on the county level now, getting involved in a really granular level on the city, on the city side of things. Tom, do you get the sense that a lot of the talk about the fracture in this party is real? Are you concerned about it? Is that part of why you're getting involved right now?
Maybe that's secondary. I mean, I must say that my initial reaction to getting involved was just serving the community.
Okay.
I saw a lot of change in my neighborhood for the better. Our neighborhood got together. Not that we weren't together, but, you know, we had a lot of social events.
Yeah.
You know, we really teamed up, so I like that aspect of it. But I have been a committee member for 11 years. It's unfortunate to kind of see some of the party divisions going on.
But you think those divisions are real?
Somewhat, I guess. I'd like to hope that we're all Democrats and we, you know, I mean, not just Democrats, but everybody in the city, right? We all want the same things. We want the city to succeed. We want a strong downtown. We want, you know, we want good jobs. You know, we all pretty much want the same thing, so I'm hoping that we can come together to accomplish those goals.
All right, Tom's they all have different places where you can learn more about them, and I'll ask Tom and then I'll ask all of our candidates as we go around the table to tell people where they can find out more. I learned a lot about your policy platforms, ideas, very specific ideas. Where can people find you online, Tom?
TomHasman.com, and I also have a Facebook, Tom Hasman for Rochester City Council.
HASMAN. So we'll get back to those issues as we go throughout the hour. Mitch Gruber is the chief programs officer at FoodLink, is running for the first time. And do you put yourself in that category of citizens who've taken a look around in recent months and said, now's the time for me to do more?
Yeah, I do. I have been doing public service in this community for the past 10 years, but in a different way. I've not been in the public sector. I've been a Head Start teacher for ABC. I've worked at FoodLink for the past 9 years and developed some of the most important public health programs in our community at large. And I have felt that there's a ceiling to the work that I can do in the nonprofit sector. Honestly, between all the administrations I've worked at and all the council members, has been some tremendous collaboration, but I think it really depends on who can build, who can have the right focuses. And for me, the focus is on building a healthy community. There are opportunities for us to think about health in the way that we plan, in the way that we look at land use, in the way that we look at our budget. And I don't believe we have champions right now, and that's no offense to Jackie or her colleagues. They all have their own focus. I want to focus on health. That's what I've been doing for the past 10 years. And there's no better time than right now when, frankly, we can get a larger voter base. We can get more people to start thinking about how they can play a role. We will not get progressive politics on a national level. It's got to start here right at the local level.
Okay. Do you see the party as split? Are you concerned about that? And do you think that you can be a force in helping unify the local party?
Without question. I have worked with every administration for the past 9 years. I've worked with every council member. I work with people in all four quadrants. I live in the Southwest quadrant. I work in the Northwest. And my work at Food Link brings me in front of every single neighborhood association across the city, one way, shape, or form. I have the fluency and the ability to understand what the different realities are in each neighborhood and how we can help.
So to the extent that there is a split in the Democratic Party, what do you think it's based on?
That's a really great question, Evan, and I think we could take a whole lot of time to talk about it. I think there's certainly issues of race that are involved. I think there's certainly issues of class that are involved, and I think there's certainly issues of power that are involved. And I am fortunate to say that I have nothing to do with any of those things. I have been completely in the nonprofit sector, working with my head down, trying to get work done in this community. And I'm ready now to put my head up in the public sector and hope that people like the message that I have to spread.
All right. That's Mitch Gruber, who is online where, Mitch?
MitchGruber.com, and I finally have a Facebook page. My mom's real happy about that. It's Mitch Gruber for City Council.
Jackie Ortiz is a current City Council member. Jackie, you know, your resume has a number of things, but why don't you tell us tell the listeners a little bit more about yourself beyond your work for City Council.
Okay. Well, I was born and raised here in Rochester, New York. I have always lived here in the city of Rochester. I am a small business owner for the last 12 years. I own an insurance agency over in the East District. Husband and a two-year-old and four dogs.
And you want to run again. You want to keep doing this. Why, Jackie?
I believe that with the position that I have, when I talk about my my other day job as being an insurance agent, I really feel like when you're in for the public sector, as far as the for-profit world, if you will, I have about 2,000 to 3,000 customers that I serve on a day-to-day basis, and they come in and we have multiple conversations on a number of different issues that truly affect their life, mainly financial. And so, really having a good pulse on what's happening in the community, I think is extremely important for anybody who is wanting to serve in elected office. And over the last 8 years, I feel as though I've made a number of issues brought them to the forefront and made a number some progress with these particular issues, as well as with the residents that I've dealt with, making good interactions and relationships. And I feel like there's still unfinished business at this point. And so at this point, I think at least one more term to be able to kind of finish some of the things that we've started.
Are you upbeat about the Democratic Party's chances to heal? Do you see those fractures and divisions? And what do you think they're based on, Jackie?
Well, so, you know, over the last several years, I've definitely seen it. And, you know, I try very hard to stick to the issues and, you know, making sure that what is best for our residents is what I spend and focus my time on. I do agree with Mitch when some of the underlying issues, but quite frankly, I think it comes down to various groups have of differences in how they believe things should be done. And for some reason, you know, it seems to be difficult to be able to bridge that gap. And how I see playing in that is making sure that, again, that I stick to the issues, because you know what, you may see one way, someone else might see accomplishing that goal a different way. But if we can stick to what the overall end outcome is, that's the most important thing. And I try to make sure that I do that. And so that no matter what, everyone is welcome to be able to have that conversation with me and I with them.
Okay. One of the things we've learned in the last couple of weeks is we have these conversations with the dozen candidates for for city councils, 5 at-large seats, is our listeners have been asking if you're supporting a mayoral candidate. And not every member of council or candidate for council is comfortable with that, but my job's not to make you comfortable. So you can answer however you like. Mitch, are you publicly supporting any candidate for mayor?
I'm not publicly supporting any candidate for mayor. My responsibility is to be able to win and be able to work with whomever wins. And I'm very proud to say that I have a very strong relationship with Mayor Warren. We've worked on projects together, and I have the utmost respect for the work that she's done. And I'm proud to say that I have a good relationship with Chief Shepard, and have worked with him on various projects before, too, with his work at Dale Carnegie. And fortunately, I think that gives me an advantage. No matter who is mayor, if I'm a city council member, I will be able to work with either effectively.
Okay. Jackie Ortiz.
So this is actually the fourth mayor that I've worked with, and I feel as though each and every single one I've had a good relationship, that we've been able to move very specific items, and including this particular mayor, as she was council and council president. We spent a lot of time, obviously, in her district in the Northeast, which is also very important to me, and we were able to move some agenda items there. And so I have a good working relationship with her. I have a good working relationship with James Shepard, with Alex White. I don't know Rachel as well. But I think that no matter what, I would also be able to work with anyone who was victorious come September. And so, no, I'm not publicly supporting anyone. I think it's important that people understand this is a council race, that we serve them in one capacity as the checks and balances to the administration and the executive side, and that it's important for them to know that we are unbiased and that we're able to work with anyone. If you're out there specifically picking someone, I think that says something else to the public.
Tom Hassman.
Yeah, I would agree with Jackie and Mitch. I've been a committee member for 11 years. I've always prided myself on getting along with everybody. You know, behind the scenes in the party, once you get your candidates, you have to, people may not know this, you have to collect petition signatures. It hasn't changed since, you know, George Washington's time. My wife and I have hosted kind of what we call petition turn-in picnics, where everybody from the committee has been invited. And the way I see it is, you know, if you're going to take a side, you're instantly going to isolate people. And I've always prided myself on being warming and welcoming. So same thing. I'm staying neutral. I'm focusing on my race. And I'm more than willing to work with whoever the mayor may be.
All right. Just to stay consistent, because when we started these conversations with the candidates for city council a couple of weeks ago, the announcement had just come on Parcel 5. Let's start there, and I'll just ask our guests if they like the decision they heard from Mayor Warren, if they think a performing arts center combined with some housing and development from Bob Morgan's team is the right move for Parcel 5 in that prime piece of real estate downtown. Tom, what do you think?
I think it's potentially the right move, and the reason why I say that is I'm very concerned about the funding. I would really like to see a business plan. I know there's a commitment of money from Golisano. And I know there's been talk. I know there was talk about a potential $10 million endowment, but I really worry about proposing something without the full funding. I'm also concerned about the auditorium theater. What happens to that? You know, if there's a brand new theater and now everything's moved over there, does that stay empty? Do we rehab it? I mean, there's talk about keeping it open for, you know, smaller plays and smaller venues, but the reality is if, you know, when we had Frontier Field, right, it's not like we kept Silver Stadium there, right? Eventually it went away. So I worry what potentially would happen to their current venue if they should shift. So I'm hopeful, but I would definitely like to see a business plan.
Should they have waited to make this decision until there was a firmer business plan?
Personally, I think yes. I probably would have felt more confident if I had seen more, you know, the business plan up front or more dedication to funding. I don't necessarily think it's totally wrong that they released it, but now that they have, I'm just kind of wait and see approach.
And when you say funding, there's two different things here. We're talking about, I assume, capital funding. We're talking about a project that could be well over $120, $130 million. Tom Golisano pledging $25 million. The Performing Arts Center could be $65 to $75 on its own. And Arnie Rothschild from RBTL told us that they're going to raise most of it privately, maybe ask the state for $15 million. That's it. And he said there will be zero chance, in his word, zero chance that they will ever have to ask the city for an ongoing subsidy. What kind of funding are you most worried about then?
I'm mostly worried, I guess, about run and maintain, maintenance funding.
Ongoing. He says that's not going to be a concern. What can't be a concern?
It is a concern for me. I mean, tell that to the people that have the fast ferry, right? Don't worry, we have the fast ferry. It's not going to be a concern. Once you build something, you know, operations costs, running and maintaining it, that can be ongoing costs, that can be very expensive. So that is a huge concern, and it would be a big disservice to not address it. So that's what I'm talking about. It not only a business plan for money on how to build it, but also how are the costs going to be maintained once it's up and running.
Okay. Jackie Ortiz, was this the right call?
There are still a lot of unanswered questions at this point, and council has definitely put forth a number of questions. We are waiting at this point in time to be able to have an opportunity to sit down with the administration and talk through some of those questions and get some of the answers. We were all given copies of the various proposals, and clearly there is passion surrounding each and every one of them for a variety of reasons. I do think that there are some key pieces here in terms of some of the proposals in regards to satisfying some housing requirements, satisfying some retail requirements, satisfying some entertainment type requirements. But by the same token, there are still a lot of unanswered questions in regards to what were the details and the specifics put out by the RFP. Was this particular proposal, does it actually adhere to those guidelines that we set forth in the beginning? And again, what are the financials? At this point, we don't necessarily know whether or not that will be able to be achieved. There is a particular window, that's my understanding, that they're being given to be able to make this. So I think there are still a number of unanswered questions. And at this point, that I do still think that there is some merit for an opportunity for even the green space. If we have all of these questions out there, I think there's still a good potential to allow this to flourish on its own, if you will, and see what might come of it.
So was it a mistake to move this quickly without more of these questions answered?
I think at this point, in making a selection for something that we don't necessarily have the particulars, I think it still might be too soon to have put it out there without understanding all of the financials for any of the projects, if we were going to do that, regardless of which one was put out there.
Okay, Mitch Gruber.
Yeah, I don't need to beat that horse. I mean, the funding is a big question. To me, it's really it's actually about the operation expenses and the revenue forecasts. I mean, I need to see that to understand, is this going to be something that's sustainable or will it be subsidized? To me, the bigger question, not the bigger one, I want answered that hasn't been addressed yet, is what kind of space do we want it to be in terms of who's going there? I think art has an incredible opportunity to unify people, and I really believe that culture and arts are one of the real strengths of this community. But I would want to make sure that with any performing arts center, we're not just focusing on Broadway. Hamilton is probably the exception to the rule, right, of having a really diverse group of people, young, old, black, white, so on and so forth. I want to see, can we make a performing arts center that can actually be inclusionary, that can actually talk to people who like different forms of art? And that's the stuff that's the nitty gritty that hasn't been fleshed out yet. And I'm really interested in getting some answers to that. I'd also just echo Tom's point. One of your points on the bio, I should tell you, I'm now a historian as well. So I think about the history of this stuff all the time. And the last thing I want to see is the Landmark Society having to go raise money in 5 years to save the auditorium. I mean, that's not okay. So those are the questions that I would ask if I were on council.
Okay. Let me start with Mitch and go back around the table. And you kind of gave us a window into what your priorities are. But tell me something that you think is actually achievable. If you end up on council, you talked about your approach focusing on health.
Yeah.
You know, as sort of a broad priority. But how can you translate that into an actual piece of change for the city, Mitch?
Sure. So first of all, the argument that I make about health all the time needs to be given this context. Health is not just prescriptions and access to hospitals. Health is, the World Health Organization defines it as physical, mental, and social well-being. That is basically a public utility. That's what we have to focus on as a municipal government. I'll just point to two examples. Number one, a couple years ago, Jackie and council and the mayor did some work on corner stores that ended up being, it was declared illegal, and it's gone now, that legislation about high impact stores. I would like to see some actual on the ground front end providers like myself, who has a host of experience when it comes to food retail, getting involved with finding ways to legislate for healthy food options. And there are examples in other cities that do that. I'll also give maybe the clearest example of all, and I apologize to Tom and Jackie, they have to hear it all the time now, but FoodThink operates an urban farm in the old subway bed in Northwest Rochester. We have 60 refugee families who grow there every day. We have turned an ugly vacant lot that is undevelopable into something beautiful. beautiful and something interesting. And every time I go to the city and ask them to expand it, expand the footprint, the real estate department tells me the same thing. They say, no, we want taxable property there. And our gardens are not a taxable property. Meanwhile, this land is never going to be developed. It's a subway bed. It's sandwiched between two existing neighborhoods. If done well, and other cities have done this, you can have an urban farm in the city that's not just growing food for soup kitchens, although that's really important, but can also be job training for landscaping, job training for agricultural positions. It can also beautify a neighborhood and make people feel good about the place they live in. And yet, the kind of conservative risk-averse approach is, no, we're going to wait for a building or for a business to come here. That's old-school politics. We need to start looking ahead, look at what other Rust Belt cities have done, like Cleveland and Baltimore, which have done beautiful work on urban ag, and move forward.
All right. Those are some specific ideas that Mitch would like to get done. Jackie, if you're back in council, what's a specific idea that you think is achievable within reach?
Okay. Well, I am currently working on a number of different things. And I guess just to kind of give you a couple of examples, one of the pieces of work that I'm on right now is when we talk about strong neighborhoods, we constantly get questions on specific properties. And when you look at the overall landscape in our city, about 65% or so is considered investor owned. And there are a number of those investors who are not local. And we have a number of properties, clearly, as we get the concerns all the time, that are not in the greatest of conditions. And so one of the things that I'm currently looking at is making an amendment to Chapter 9020 of the Building Code to be able to require maintenance and property contacts to provide some transparency and empowerment to our residents that would actually be listed on the website that would provide a natural name is what we're calling it. Cannot be an LLC. You cannot list a PO box on there. You must provide a business telephone number to provide some transparency into who the property owner is. Is there a way to be able to reach out and contact that person? A resident should not necessarily have to feel that their lifeline is always to the neighborhood service center. Neighborhood associations should have some empowerment to feel, you know what, I can reach out to that particular property owner myself. Let's create a relationship and see if we can work on some of the issues that we are dealing with here in our neighborhoods, because you are not experiencing it for yourself. That's one particular area that I'm working on that I definitely think is within reach and hopefully within actually the next 1 or 2 months. One of the other things that we are actively working on that has been an issue for many, both residents and businesses, is the nuisance point system. And that is something that we are definitely taking a look at as a huge overhaul. We had a consultant about a year ago take a look at that. They have provided about 8 or so recommendations, of which they have literally taken each and every one of those and had advisory committees that have been put together to take a look at how exactly do we achieve those and implement those recommendations. We are months away from being able to actually take a look at some of those. For example, holding individual a person's accountable. So the property, the business, many times are the ones assessed with the points. We've gotten a lot of concerns that, hey, that's not necessarily fair. What about the individual perpetrators who have actually then, you know, committed this act, whatever it might be? How exactly do we hold these individual accountables and really create a fair and equitable system on the both residential and the commercial side? So that is something that we are taking a look at. And again, I think in the next couple of months, you will have some legislation to be able to address at least the majority of some of those concerns.
Okay. Tom Hasman, a priority for you and one that might be tangibly achievable.
So a lot of my experience is in neighborhood development, and I've been walking around a lot of neighborhoods going door to door, and it's just amazing, the city of Rochester, what beautiful neighborhoods we have, the amazing housing stock we have. So one of the things I would like to do is use my experience with my neighborhood and help other neighborhoods and neighborhood associations come up with a neighborhood plan for their neighborhood, because I know that different neighborhoods have different needs. For example, some neighborhoods have a lot of zombie houses, and they bring down property values. People break in. They become drug houses. I've been going door to door, and some people have been telling me that they don't feel safe at all in their own neighborhood anymore. I actually had a lady tell me, why are you walking? Do you feel safe in my neighborhood? I said, I feel safe. It was the day, by the way, not at night. She said, I don't even feel safe during the day anymore. And that broke my heart. It's obviously we got issues. And to me, it all starts with neighborhood development. If I could work with neighborhoods, help them get plans, whether it's tackling zombie houses, getting rid of drug houses, helping neighbors feel safe, getting connected again, a sense of community, something that Jackie touched on, finding absentee landlords, making sure they're upkeeping their properties, you know, really making neighborhoods livable. You know, we got great housing stock. A lot of these houses are great starter homes, very reasonably priced. It would be great to also work with neighborhoods to rehab houses. And in Utah, they had a successful program where they rehabbed a lot of houses and they made them available to homeless people. And not only did that take pressure off emergency services, but it gave them a home, which then allowed them stability, a chance to apply for a job, get back on their feet. And a lot of them now have jobs and they're paying taxes. They're, you know, it's pretty amazing. So I think things like that, think outside the box.
Can I follow up on this based
on
your
sure.
website? Your website is pretty detailed on the issue of, for example, gentrification.
Correct.
And you not only talk about gentrification, but something that you call hyper-gentrification. Can you distinguish those and why you're concerned about that in Rochester?
Well, so I think you might kind of happening downtown where there's been so much development downtown on very upper level, you know, East End, very high end apartments and condos that you end up pricing so many people out of the market. And then you create a downtown that can only be, you know, that only the very, very rich, you know, of Rochester can afford. So another thing that I like to do is, you know, whenever we talk about new development, there needs to factor in that there needs to be affordable housing, needs to be a factor. And, you know, rehabbing a lot of these properties, some of these properties that are zombie houses, you know, if you could rehab them, they're great starter affordable homes. And that's one thing that's really so nice about Rochester is, you know, we have a mix of many different people. So that's something to factor in as well.
On the policy side of things, we had a conversation in the last month or so about gentrification, and one of the suggestions that came up was a kind of program that protects people who have been in a neighborhood for a long time when values start to go up. And the proposal goes something like this. If the value of your home goes up more than X over X amount of years, you can't be taxed beyond a certain point. You know, so some people saw in 10 years the assessment on their home go up, you know, 75%, something like that. And all of a sudden, you can't even afford the taxes and you feel like you're pushed out of your own neighborhood because of what is ostensibly a good thing. People coming in, you know, more value, more rehab, but all of a sudden that history is gone. Would you support policy that protects people, that sort of sets a ceiling at some point that does limit that?
I definitely would. And to add to that, so when I lived in D.C., I actually lived in Northern Virginia, and Senator Tim Kaine, who was Hillary's vice presidential nominee, I volunteered on his campaign when he was running for governor. And one of the things I learned that when he was mayor of Richmond, he passed a successful policy where if you made improvements to your home, you were not taxed on those improvements for 10 years. So that was a way for somebody to kind of absorb the upcoming increase. But, you know, that I like your idea even better.
It's not my idea. I'm just repeating it from others. So.
Okay. But I think that's a great idea as well. I mean, that's one thing I've talked about was what Tim Kaine did in Richmond about putting the brakes for 10 years on any improvements. But yes, anything that can help people stay in their houses. I mean, it's another thing I've been hearing is people are concerned about paying their mortgage, paying their property taxes. They seem to go up 3-4% every year. And yeah, eventually it gets to a point where you can't afford to stay in your own house, or you can barely afford to stay in your own house, but you're not upkeeping it. So then what happens is you start to get the leaky roof, broken window, and then before you know it, you give up and you got another potential zombie property on your hands.
Okay. Jackie Ortiz, gentrification. Is it a problem right now, and are there solutions to it that you can see for council to act on?
I think it has the potential of being a much larger problem in the downtown area, as Tom already mentioned, because as you see the development occurring, he is correct that a number of the properties are definitely out of reach for many in regards to their price points. But each and every time there is an opportunity, I will tell people that council absolutely does make sure that affordable units are a part of the mix. Many times it's very dependent upon the source of funding in order for us to be able to make that mandate on there. And every time there is an opportunity, we definitely do ensure that affordable housing is a part of the mix. So I think downtown, we have to kind of walk a fine line there and really be cautious about how we're going about things. But as far as the neighborhoods are concerned, we obviously had a very large program with our FIS that was one neighborhood within each of the four quadrants that did pour in millions of dollars for each of those neighborhoods. And I will tell you that based on the study that was provided as kind of the outcome and the results of that, the market market values in those neighborhoods, although they did rise, it was really not significant enough where it made enough of an assessment change for, as far as the tax impact. I specifically looked at numbers in the Market View Heights neighborhood, and although a number of properties, even whole streets actually, were completely rehabbed, the property values are still not necessarily there to be able to have increased the assessments far enough to make that tax change yet. Although we are, you know, we don't want to wait for that day to happen. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you at this point, it's not as big of an issue just yet necessarily in the neighborhoods as far as the assessment and the taxes. Now, that's not to say that some taxes have not increased, but I wouldn't say necessarily to the level of pushing people out of their neighborhoods yet. So not wanting to wait for that time to necessarily happen as more money gets put into these neighborhoods, we are taking a look at opportunities to provide a gradual step increase in regards to the way in which we tax the assessments if they do change.
Okay. Mitch Gruber.
So I think it's a really interesting question. And I personally live the corner of West Main and King Street. I live in a neighborhood that is among the poorest in the city of Rochester. I live in the 14608 zip code. Two streets down from me is Jefferson, which is known as having some of the highest crime rates and poverty rates in the city. And I bought a house in my neighborhood because I deeply care about that neighborhood, and I absolutely want to be a force for positive change. I think that gentrification is a term that unfortunately can be misused at times, and especially in a place like Rochester versus a place like Brooklyn or San Francisco, where it's pretty instantaneous. Here, it's not a matter of someone like me, who's a middle class white guy, moving into West Main and King Street. I didn't displace anyone, and in fact, I've been a very active member of my neighborhood association, my neighborhood board. I know all my neighbors, and we all listen to each other and work very well as a neighborhood to try to make sure that we're building a healthier, stronger neighborhood. There has to be policies in place to make sure that displacement doesn't happen. And I think that we've already seen some issues here in certain parts of the Southwest where the U of R's footprint begins to move over. And I think it's critical to be conscious of these things. But we also want to look at, again, I'll point to your favorite city, Cleveland. There are some excellent studies that point to the neighborhoods where that are the most diverse, the neighborhoods that have the most kind of young people moving back into the city and buying homes. As long as there's good, solid foundation for people not being displaced, those end up being the strongest neighborhoods, the most culturally vibrant, the most economically vibrant and dynamic. So we can look to cities like Cleveland as our model and not be scared of what happened in New York City and San Francisco.
Okay, let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back to your phone calls. If you want to call the program, we've got time to take some of your calls at 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You just heard Mitch Gruber, Chief Programs Officer at Foodlink. Jackie Ortiz is a city council member who is running for re-election. Tom Hasman is an information security risk manager for a firm out of Falls Church, Virginia, and a member of the 23rd Legislative Committee, among other things on his resume as well, former county clerk candidate. So they're all running for city council, and we've been interviewing the candidates for city council, a dozen of them for five seats. We'll come back to some of your phone calls next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Aaron Mayer joins us. He is the first African-American president of the National Sierra Club. He's in Rochester for an event today, and we'll talk to him about his work, his mission as the president of the Sierra Club, how he is trying to bring more social justice and tie it to the environmental movement, make the environmental movement more broad-based, more inclusive to all. It's all coming up next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Sam in Rochester is first on the phones. Go ahead, Sam.
Thank you, Evan, for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't know who the young man is, but I know one of them are running for city council. And I don't know if he read my article in the Democrat and Chronicle, but he was saying verbatim what I was saying about this city. We're doing a lot of investment downtown, but we're not doing anything in the urban communities. And the zombie houses, like he said, are there, and the people are afraid to come out, even during the daytime. And when they do come out, they don't go any farther than their porches. And he was saying something, about downtown, about the Performing Arts Center. Now, and I know he was saying that they're going to make it for every ethnic group, but even if you put it downtown, African Americans are not going to be able to take advantage of it. And I tell you why. And that's because they can't afford to buy food. They can't afford decent housing. So how are they going to have money to go to a performing arts center? You know, I can't think of who the young man is that you have in the station, but if I wasn't with Shepherd, I'd ask him to run for mayor because he seemed to have more knowledge about this city than the present mayor that we have now.
All right,
but
Sam.
I'm back with Shepherd now. But
all right, Sam. Listen, you give us a lot to think about. Thank you for the phone call, Sam. The two quote unquote young men in studio are Mitch Gruber and Tom Hasman, and they are not running for mayor. They are running for city council. Who knows? Someday Jackie or Mitch or Tom might run for mayor. But for now, they're all running for city council, and I'll let all of you respond. Tom, you know, he's concerned about a number of things regarding the performing arts. So you want to add to what you just heard?
I guess if you don't mind, I was going to talk about, because I think there's actually two of us, Sam. So I was the one that kind of talked about the zombie properties.
Yep.
And, you know, people are afraid to leave their houses. You said you wrote a letter to the DNC. I did not see the letter, but obviously we're on the same page. I mean, just talking with people going door to door, these are their concerns. And, you know, like I said, it's something that I definitely want to address. Where are you as far as the...
I mean, he's also concerned about inclusion. I mean, he says African Americans are not going to be able to really access or use the Performing Arts Center. It's a broad-based comment. Are you concerned about that, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Mitch touched on that. If we build something, we want to make sure that it's accessible and open to everybody. So again, as I pointed out, it's something I would like to see in the business plan. I mean, we've all discussed how it's lacking details. There was a big announcement, but there hasn't been much details. So.
All right, are you running for mayor, by the way?
I am not running
just
for
city
mayor.
Council.
I'm running just for city council.
All right, Mitch, you running for city council?
I'm running for city council. And no disrespect to Tom, so don't take this the wrong way, but
usually that means some disrespect is coming. But go ahead.
You've been walking the streets to knock on doors right now. I've been working in these communities for the last 10 years, and there are maybe some people who do say that they're scared to come outside, and Sam may think that the sky is falling. We also have some incredibly wonderful, resilient communities here, even in some of the most low-income neighborhoods in the city of Rochester. And so I can tell you that the one of the programs I'm most proud of is our curbside market, which goes into every single public housing facility with over 20 residents, barring one, all the community health centers, the major YMCAs, and we are serving folks who are at the very, very, very lowest level of income in this community, folks who rely on SNAP benefits and WIC benefits, and they come out of their house gladly to come shop on the curbside market. Smiles on their face, excited to be able to be engaged, because when you build the right programs and the right initiatives, it doesn't matter what neighborhood someone lives in, people want to go out, people want to be engaged. The argument I make all day, Evan, is that people want to be healthy. Nobody doesn't want to have their kids play. Nobody doesn't want to eat well. And so I think what Tom saw is probably the exception to the rule, and that's kind of what Sam is commenting on as well.
Okay, now you want to follow up to that, Tom?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I'm not saying that everyone's afraid to come out of their houses. I'm just saying that I've talked to a few people that had that perception, and to them, the perception is the reality. I'm with you 100%. I've said what a great city Rochester is, and our resiliency, and what great neighborhoods we have. So yeah, I mean, if you're thinking that I'm on the premise that everybody in the city is afraid to come out of their house, no, that's not the case at all. But for some people, that is the reality. And, you know, if you're going to be a council member, you need to address everyone's concerns. Okay. And if that's a concern of Sam's, that's something that I'm going to want to address.
All right, Jackie.
I guess I just wanted to just step in really quick here because clearly we do have an issue with the vacant, abandoned and dilapidated homes here. But I also think that it would also be very helpful, even though it doesn't necessarily look maybe perhaps in some neighborhoods that things have changed enough. We have done a significant amount of work in being able to, one, demo properties that are beyond salvage, be able to rehab other properties for first-time home buyers, and also be able to assist current homeowners with the rehabilitation of their properties. Obviously, funds are extremely limited, but I would definitely encourage people to take a look. Last fall, actually more than that, about a year ago at this point, myself with the county clerk and a number of other cross-functional members throughout the city and actually towns, we've created the Vacant Abandoned Property Task Force, because this is not just a city problem. Although it's the largest for us, every single municipality and town faces some of the exact same issues. And there is about 24 different recommendations that the team has put together. We are actively working on every single one of those to be able to tackle this problem together. And so there is, and I'm happy to get you that link on there, but just through the county clerk's office, they have the link to the study that we put together, as well as the 24 or so recommendations. And there are three sub-teams that are actually working on this. And so anyone who is interested in learning more and actually wanting to participate in helping to figure this stuff out, there is absolutely an opportunity for everyone to do that. So if you're looking at trying to figure out how to prevent it, if you're looking at identifying and maintaining them, if you're looking at opportunities for rehabilitation, there is a subgroup within this one to be able to get your ideas and your own hands, you know, down and dirty.
And Jackie, speaking of links, you are too kind to correct me for not telling you that you can tell our listeners where they can learn more about you online. Your other candidates at the table have websites. I know you're somewhere online.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Jackie.
No, not at all. So I can be reached at, I can be reached a number of different ways. There is obviously a telephone number at City Hall from our office. My personal office on Alexander, you're more than welcome to call there, but ortizforcouncil.com.
OrtizForCouncil.com. Mm-hmm. And by the way, here's Robert sending an email saying, what a breath of fresh air this panel discussion is. Candidates are polite, not interrupting each other or taking petty pot shots. A good first hour. That's what we're aiming for with these discussions. Substance, a lot of really specifics on issues. You're hearing that. They don't agree on everything, but I think Robert, you're on the money with that comment. Joe in Rochester is next on the phone. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Really glad to hear you guys talking about preserving affordability and being proactive about that, and also about addressing the zombie properties. I just wanted to let everyone on the panel who may not already be aware, and those listening, that we have a community land trust in Rochester. It's called the City Roots Community Land Trust, that works to preserve affordability and empower residents. And we're actually mentioned in the study that Jackie just mentioned several times, and we meet at the Mead office on Mondays at 5:30. It's open to the public. We'd love for people to join in. And I'm just wondering from the panel specifically if you have any familiarity with community land trusts, and if you do, if you're generally supportive, and if you're not, if you'd be interested in learning more.
All right, Joe, thank you. Council Member Ortiz, you were nodding right away, so go ahead.
Yes, he is absolutely correct. One of the recommendations under the opportunity for rehabilitation section is to be able to work with organizations like the Community Land Trust to be able to figure out how to get properties in the hands of organizations like this whose sole goal is to be able to rehabilitate and be able to provide quality housing to residents in the neighborhood. So I would definitely agree. We are already looking at how to be able to do that. And obviously, again, everything really comes down to the funding mechanism and pass to be able to get these properties in the hands of organizations like theirs.
Okay, Mitch Gruber.
Yeah, I'm proud to say that your caller right there, Joe, is one of my strongest campaign advisors, and Joe has informed
no
me.
No plants allowed, Mitch.
No plant. I'm kidding. Joe probably calls in all the time.
No, he probably does. I'm kidding.
But Joe has informed me all about the Community Land Trust, and I'm incredibly interested. Okay. And what I would also say is, when I do talk about healthy communities, if you look at some of the things that have been done across the world in this type of work, is not just looking at the things I've talked about, like food and land, but also healthy housing. I mean, healthy housing to me is one of the most critical parts we have of health in all policies.
But what's holding this back then in the city, Mitch? What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, the more I've kind of explored this and plumbed a little bit, I think that there just are not advocates right now. Everyone is an advocate of something. Jackie is an incredible advocate of small businesses, and I give her all the credit in the world for that. But right now, we do not have advocates who think about health in all policies. I've been sitting on Healthy Kids for a while, which is a board through Common Ground Health. I've worked in a number of different ways to think about the role of the municipality in health, and that's just not a champion that we've had on city council.
Okay. Tom Hasman.
Yeah, I'm all about public-private partnerships, and so this is a great example. You know, the city cannot do it alone. I mean, there's only so much resources, so getting the public involved, Having a coordinated effort, having a game plan to rehab these houses. There are a lot of programs out there. I think we got to start talking to each other. I think a lot of this stuff, I've seen it in government a lot. There's a lot of what we call stovepiping efforts. Someone's doing something over here, someone's doing something very similar over there. You got to bring them together. So I would definitely be interested in getting involved with this group and reaching out and, you know, having private sector, non-for-profits work with the city to tackle this problem is outstanding.
All right, back to the phones because our phones are flooded and we only have a little time left here. Bonnie in Rochester next. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, well, a couple comments. One is that it's not so much that there aren't plans. I mean, they have been slow in coming somewhat because the communities have been not been able to be organized as quickly because the city really focused so much on downtown that newer organizing groups around the communities. But that's gotten a little bit better. It's people's own volition, not so much that somebody came in and said, magic, here, do it. But the problem is you get these plans, and they're very hard to carry out. Some of the ideas that people have voiced here are good and positive. But it's a different direction the city had been going in, pretty much. I mean, now they're saying, you know, we're in for the neighborhoods and everything. But I guess what I would want to know is what are some of the very fundamental changes, fundamental issues that if you were in charge of redevelopment and doing it over again, going back, pushing the clock back to maybe 20 years where we started to see more of this, what would the candidates do? And I'm looking at not just things that are easy, but things that would maybe require new legislation, require whatever it takes, because that's what it is going to take for a lot of these things to come to fruition, and hopefully not having to wait another 30 years and relying too much on things like corporate welfare.
Okay. Bonnie, thank you. In fact, I'll start at the end there. Tom Hesman, you said you're a champion of public-private partnerships. Some callers like Bonnie view most of that as sort of giveaways or unnecessary. How do you balance? How do you make sure that the decisions are appropriate and don't become corporate welfare?
Well, you need to, you need public involvement, right? The public is the best check and balance on things like this. So if you have open meetings, you invite the public, you have meeting minutes, you get buy-in, you know, it's benefiting the community. That's how you guarantee or minimize the chances that something could be corrupt or become corporate welfare. But to touch on our point about going 20 years ago, the biggest thing for me, I touched on a little bit, is prevention. If you have a house that is starting to fall in disrepair, it's got a leaky roof, it's got a few broken windows, you're much better off trying to help that homeowner make those small repairs while the house is still livable before small repairs become big repairs. And then before you know it, somebody gives up, abandons that property. So not only do you have many zombie houses that Jackie talked about we're trying to take care of, well, now you just added another zombie house to your list. So to me, prevention is a great way to really stop this from getting worse while we try to make it better.
All right, Mitch Gruber, about 45 seconds to respond to Bonnie. Go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah, I would say that, one of the big issues is you want me to look 20 years in the past. I would say that if you look across the course of American history, we've seen a whole lot of things different in terms of the way we think of urban centers. And so what we wanted 20 years ago was a whole lot different than what we want now. I want to look 20 years in the future. I want to take the city of Rochester's municipal government and look at what can we build for a city of 210,000 people that was built for 350,000 people. What can we do with our land? What can we do by looking across other cities and look at best practices and stop being smug town, and how can we build a city of the future? Look at Pittsburgh and Cleveland and some of our neighbors that have done tremendous jobs in building new growth in innovative ways. Let's not look at the past. Let's look forward.
Okay. Jackie Ortiz.
I would absolutely agree with that. And I would say that over the last several years, unfortunately, we have been a little bit lacking in our planning department. We have a lot of neighborhood plans, and I think those are all wonderful because the needs are different. But for many years, we have unfortunately lacked from the standpoint of someone pulling all of those pieces together. Do they actually make sense? Are we forward thinking and forward looking here? Because again, what we want today is that really the trend is that where the lifestyle is going in terms of what people are looking to be able to achieve. And so I really would say that at this point in looking forward, we need to beef up our planning efforts to take a look holistically at the entire city. Although neighborhoods absolutely are important, how exactly do they all link together?
I mean, we didn't even get to things like the police accountability study. We didn't get to all kinds of different things. So I'll just ask you, if you're, well, before September, come back. Maybe we'll do a second round of this. These have been very popular. We've now had 9 of the 12 candidates for city council, the remaining 3, the at-large seats, the remaining 3 next week. And I want to echo what Robert said earlier. I mean, I think Rochester has a wealth of talent and really interested people with specific ideas. Mitch Gruber online where?
MitchGruber.com. I'd love to have anyone's support. Look me up. Come volunteer.
Thank you very much. Jackie Ortiz online where?
OrtizForCouncil.com. Absolutely love your support as
thank
well.
Thank you, Jackie. Tom Hasman online where?
TomHasman.com. I would also love your support, and thanks for having us on today.
Well, thank you all. And I think Rochester has a lot of interesting possibilities for 5 seats and 12 candidates. Short break. More Connections is next.